planet's puppet masters almost surely have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. And until you've thoroughly tested every last close trusted view, I find the more you think you know, the less you really do.
That's true, Dr. Zayas.
Where would we be without THC? Cause we know they're lying to us, just don't know.
All right, folks, a smart man once told me that if you don't spend time in your own head getting familiar with your own thoughts, how do you know they're really yours? And it's a question worth reflecting on, though the tech-obsessed live-to-work modern world makes it harder than ever to take that time. Whether by happy accident or nefarious design, I can't say for certain, but on a show where we regularly flip through the Rolodex of entity influence, today we're going to narrow in on a slice of the pie where we don't often consider the role or possibilities of such manipulations, and that's love and relationships. I know it might be an uncomfortable thought to consider passionate romance could be nothing more than the love bite of an interdimensional parasite coaxing you to bed with your significant other for their own selfish desires, but if all our thoughts and actions are up for review when it comes for non-human influence, love can be no exception. And with us is the guest of guests to have such a chat. Her name is Eve Lorgan, and she's been researching alien abductions since the 80s, and upon getting her master's in counseling psychology, she began working with abduction experiencers as well as MKUltra, MILLABS, and ritual abuse victims, and her many years in this realm has resulted in two books. Firstly, The Love Bite, Alien Interference and Human Love Relationships, and more recently, The Dark Side of Cupid, Love Affairs, the Supernatural, and Energy Vampirism. She's done great work, and I can't wait to get down to it. Eve, welcome to The Higher Side.
Oh, thank you for having me on today. It's great.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I think you have a really unique approach to these alternative ideas by focusing on the love and relationship side of things. And if you're already open to the idea of interdimensional influence in human lives, this should be kind of a no-brainer, right? Because what other area of life are we so compelled to act so irrationally? It seems almost cliche at this point. It makes sense that we should take a second look at that. But let's start out by defining some of your terms, because there is a difference between a clear-cut alien love bite and what you call a dark side of Cupid type relationship. Can you break these open for us?
Well, the Love Bite book, which was the one that first came out in the year 2000, was really more about, quote, the alien love bite. And what I discovered working with people who've had multiple alien abduction histories and or alien visitations, experiences, and also those who had what I call the MILLAB or the MILLAB kind of experience. Mm-hmm. Many of them had their relationships engineered or disrupted or interfered with in some way by who they felt were their alien handlers. And sometimes they were, you know, aliens or ETs or what they thought were ETs. And other times it wasn't always clear, or maybe it was, let's say, the MILLAB handler who was a human, but operating in this kind of secret underground base kind of situation along with aliens. So my first book was really about several case histories of people who definitely recognized that their love connections have been engineered or set up or even disrupted for some reason by these alien beings, where they actually witnessed alien beings, you know, coming in the room and trying to scare off, let's say, a partner who is somebody you're dating that's a new lover. Or, I mean, there's a lot of different cases in that book that basically demonstrate the hypothesis that, hey, not only are aliens doing things like the classic abduction experience or the visitations where they may be doing medical procedures or, you know, taking you on a ship or whatever it is that you usually hear about, but they're also engineering our love relationships and actually interfering on a more subtle level. Sometimes it's not so subtle, but it will interfere with our emotional lives as if they're testing our emotional responses to things and interfering in different ways that I think many of the early researchers didn't consider credible evidence. But it doesn't really matter if it sounds credible or not. They're doing what they're doing, and the effects are very well witnessed and felt by a lot of people. So that was the first book, and that opened up a huge can of worms, although my predecessors before me knew well about this phenomena. And it was the late Dr. Carla Turner and Barbara Bartholik in particular who really helped educate me on what we're calling the drama of the love obsession that has been engineered by certain types of alien beings. Mm-hmm. So that helped me a lot in terms of understanding what was happening, because it was actually happening to me and several people when I was having a support group. So I was doing this actually in the early 1990s or the mid 90s. I was doing a regular support group for people who've had what I call anomalous trauma. And most of it was people who knew they were having like alien visitations or maybe the military abduction element. And then some who might have had some kind of MK Ultra or ritual abuse. But most of them were people who were very well familiar with the alien abduction experience. And so we had discovered that there were several of us having experiences where we were all basically in some kind of love obsession, where we were being, having these like profound dreams that felt more than dreams. Mm-hmm. And this actually happens to a lot of people who have these alien visitations many times in their life. But, you know, a lot of times people think, oh, it's just a dream, but really it's not a dream. They're actually interacting with you on another level of reality, and they can interfere with you. And maybe you only remember it as a dream, and it could actually be a physical event, or it could be something where they're interacting on another dimensional reality or the astral plane. But more often than not, they definitely can interfere. And what we called it in the old days, we would say, well, you know, I had this really weird dream, and, you know, such and such was present, and there was an alien standing there, and they wanted me to be with this other person. And they wanted me to, they were like testing me to see how I would find this other person to be attractive. And it was like they were trying to set us up.
Kind of like how we breed animals in the zoo.
Yeah. Well, it's like they look at a lot of parameters, I think, in these relationship setups. Mm-hmm. So it tended to be that the many abductees were set up with other abductees, so that the aliens tended to want to use people who were already under their watch, so to speak, mm-hmm. or they're in the program. But some of them were not. Some of them were actually chosen for one reason or another, for a particular reason. And, you know, it wasn't always known what it would be. But then after they were finished with whatever they wanted to use that person for, it basically switched them right off, and the relationship was cut off. And then they were on to the next experiment. So this is actually explained in several cases in the Love Bite.
Interesting. So this Love Bite idea is sort of new to me, but it makes a lot of sense. Let me ask you what these entities get out of these manipulations. Are there different categories or agendas that you've identified?
Oh, definitely. I think there's layers of agendas as well. Mm-hmm. For example, in the military abduction element, where there is obviously a human element and some kind of covert cabal, shadow government, military faction that is working in conjunction with non-human entities, or what appear to be non-human entities, where, let's say, the military cabal human group may have a particular agenda or reason for setting someone up or breaking their relationship up. And then the entities that they're working for, who actually are their bosses, because the hierarchy goes, basically it's the alien controllers in a lot of these things. And then the aliens may have their own agenda, where that they're basically, you know, making a deal. Mm-hmm. So for the reptilians, for example, they have their own, they want to feed on the energy more or less. They tend to do that more often. They tend to be more overt with their strategy and how they're manipulating. So the military may want to use someone, let's say, as an operative, to do remote viewing or some kind of psychic ability that's amplified through sexual energy. And it's known that sexual energy and kundalini activation can amplify that kind of psychic ability and paranormal ability thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the aliens will know how to amplify and manipulate that, so that the kundalini and the sexual energy is basically amplified through a interaction with a reptilian, for example. And then right after that sexual interaction where that amplification takes place, the military would come, and then they will take that person. Sometimes they will take them out of the body, or they'll take their body, and then they'll take them through a portal, and then they use them on some kind of operation that may involve, let's say, remote viewing or some kind of psychic thing.
Wow.
So that actually was reported in the book with a MILAB who had numerous encounters. So what I had hypothesized is there was basically four or five reasons. And of course, the first one was really what Barbara Bartholicht helped me understand clearly. And that was that there's a type of emotional harvesting of energies that these beings are feeding off of us, and that they are deliberately creating these dramas and siphoning the sexual energy and the kundalini energy to literally feed off of it as if it was a drug that fed them, like they are a type of vampire and parasite. I think that's the main reason. But there's other reasons that they may want to put people together, and it could be they want a particular couple to work together because their connection will facilitate them carrying out, let's say, an agenda for their controllers, or they may want to have children of that genetic combination or that bloodline. Or let's see, there was several, like if there were Milabs, sometimes they put people together because it amplifies the sexual kundalini energy in such a way that they are better twinned pairs working together as operatives, so that they work better because they have a stronger bond and they're part of the, let's say, the characteristics of having a love bite, for example, is you have a very, very powerful connection, and it can feel like a soulmate because it's so strong that you're literally empathic and telepathic with that other person. You can, like, it's like your souls are blended together in some of these experiences. So when that happens, these, let's say a twinned pair will be telepathic with one another, and they could share information on in a much more secure way than, let's say, other forms of information transfer. So even things like mind file sharing, they literally download information from the energy body into the love bite partner. And that's what happens in Milabs, in these high level operations that are definitely, you know, beyond what we hear of in some of these MK Ultra projects, although now we're starting to hear about that a little bit more in terms of the super soldiers and what they really do and how they're used. But the aliens also use people this way, not just the human handlers. So.
Right. And you mentioned energy feeding. This is a big explanation behind the pedophilia rings we hear about in these high level elite circles and institutions. They sometimes get exposed and then are never really held accountable. But feeding on the trauma and energy of children is apparently a key component. Maybe you get more bang for the buck with children. I know it's just speculation, but I wonder about the chicken and the egg question. Do powerful groups just decide to start feeding off the trauma and energy of children because they can? Or can some of their wealth and power and longevity be attributed to these practices? It's hard to place exactly, and maybe these practices are being carried out on behalf of the non-human portion of the power pyramid. Maybe it's not even energy for the humans themselves, a proverbial deal with the devil type exchange. Again, hard to speak with any certainty here, but there definitely seems to be a connection, wouldn't you say?
Well, there's definitely a connection between energy and power, because sexual energy is, you know, the Shakti, they call it Shakti, and the life force does give you more power when you know how to apply it. And a lot of these, I think, people who are doing it, they've been able to streamline sorcery, black magic, tantra, along with technology to amplify what they can get out of this life force energy. And it's most likely done through sexual energy siphoning or blood sacrifice in terms of the Satanists and stuff. But I think there's an element of what I call the psychopathic vampiric character of many of these people. Well, people who are hosted by these non-human malevolent, we can call them archontic parasites. You can call them other names.
Right.
But there's a psychopathic characteristic that causes them to behave in ways that are quite perverse and corrupt and sexually perverted. And so I think that happens with a lot of these groups that have been taken over by these really malevolent entities that require blood sacrifice and feeding to feed these entities.
Right. Man. And it's a common thing to talk about being overwhelmed or controlled by sexual desire and libido. But how do we know what's built into our biology versus what's being manipulated by something else outside? Have you developed a method to kind of discern between the two?
Well, I suppose the only way to know is if you had one of these manipulations and then you compared it to what wasn't a manipulation.
Fair.
Sometimes you only know when, let's say, you have a love bite. Let me tell you, when you have one, you know, because it is so powerful. I mean, the connection is often sudden, like a sudden switching on and a love obsession with another person. And sometimes this happens in accordance with a powerful dream that seems a little more real than usual. Or it could happen after an abduction where there's missing time or a light in the sky. Or maybe you meet somebody and they just seem to have qualities that seem unnaturally charismatic or powerful. But when you have an activation of your sex drive where, let's say, it'll be switched on almost like something is literally being switched on in the middle of the night at a certain time or a certain place in your body, along with, you know, images that's being thrown in there, then you know there's something artificial about it. So you really have to just feel what it feels like. Mm-hmm. But energy healers that I have worked with over the years, clairvoyance, for example, where they actually perceive the energy body, such as the aura and the chakras and the different meridians. And some who are quite clairvoyant can actually perceive if there are, let's say, energetic overlays and implants or psychic cords linking them into an entity or a person. So oftentimes you'll be able to see and feel something that feels like an etheric implant or maybe even a physical implant. If you can, you know, do some kind of scan and find something there. Mm-hmm. So that's been found. Right. That's actually common. Yeah.
So if a person is not practicing magic overtly, how do they really get mixed up with these types of entities? Is it as random as, say, getting stung by a bee? Do we just occasionally wander onto the radar of some interdimensional being in some cases?
Well, some people believe that this is just a part of being born into this reality on Earth, that once we're born, we're in a predatory realm. We are under the reality of these archontic rulers who are parasites by nature. That's basically a Gnostic belief. But I think that there are ways where you may come under more influence of these beings by having certain kinds of genetic profiles, bloodlines, or connections with certain groups. So I don't think it's necessarily opportunistic, although I think there are some who tend to be chosen where it seems like it's out of the blue and they're just some kind of experiment who's being suddenly targeted. But in my work, I've found that there usually is a pattern that you could observe where the connections are made. And that's actually a good thing, because then that shows that we can have power over this kind of situation to explore our own history. And this is what I do in my therapeutic work, where I always basically explore someone's history in terms of, you know, traumas, what's the family connections, you know, do they have any affiliations with occult groups that practice magic or witchcraft or blood oaths or sacrifices for many generations down? Maybe they're not even aware of that kind of a connection, or alphabet soup agencies, military industrial complex careers, aerospace careers. One of the things that we found with the MILABs in particular, and these are people that we defined as someone having multiple alien abductions where they actually observed aliens in many of their encounters or abductions, but they also had this military element as if they're in a specific project that has MKUltra overtones. Okay. Mm-hmm. And many of those people had parents who worked for alphabet soup agencies or high-level Freemason occult witchcraft groups or aerospace. So a lot of, I think that they, once these companies hire these people, they make some kind of agreements, or they may get involved in certain occult organizations that kind of lock them in under a type of control system, where once they make those agreements with those large corporations or occult groups, then that locks in a kind of permission to use everybody under their bloodline in these projects. And I think there's something to that.
Yeah, you hear about it more and more. And
definitely
on the subject of the MILABs thing, I hear really three different types of cases, I guess. I hear people saying that this is a covert Nazi eugenics program under the guise of an alien abduction program, or that it's a partnership between ETs and military, like you just mentioned, or that in some cases the military is doing their own follow-up abductions on people who have had actual alien abductions to try to get more information on what it's like for these people. Do you see all three of those being true, or is it a combination, or is it more one than the other?
You know, actually, I think all three are true. What I'm finding is that there's definitely the whole interrogation thing where, let's say, these groups, the covert military, shadow government, whatever, they tend to know who's being taken or who is having real encounters with, like, the real ETs, like the real higher up ones or occasional ones. And then they will want to follow them, probably for their own national security reasons, or they want to find out you know, if this person is a threat or who they're working with, and if it's counter to their agenda, or if they're, you know, a security risk. Mm-hmm. And then there's the ones that I think that they do fake alien abductions under the cover, you know, making it pretend aliens, and they're really just doing some kind of MK Ultra sub project. And then some of these aliens are believed to be, maybe they're nothing more than these hyperdimensional entities that come from other dimensional realms that have been invoked through these occult sorcery types of groups. And then they are able to carry out a lot of different control systems and MKUltra and theatrical things with what they've learned through these entities to control and manipulate people like puppets. So, I mean, I think all of that's going on. One of the things that I've heard recently has to do with like the Nazi connection, which we know there's a Nazi connection with some of this ET technology and reverse engineered stuff.
Right.
But I think it has to do with time travel technology and what happens when, let's say, certain groups, humans, will use this, and then over time they will insert themselves throughout history so that they basically become a breakaway group or a breakaway civilization, and that maybe the time travel technology, along with their, let's say, where are they at spiritually in terms of ethics, if they are on a selfish bent, you know, or if they don't have integrity, then they can become regressive and their genetics actually degrade to become more, I don't know, just more degraded and more psychopathic. And I think actually that's what's happened with some of these like really psychopathic, vampiric, non-human entities that, you know, they were calling them aliens, but it makes you wonder, well, how did they get that way? Because a lot of these abduction projects, they're claiming that, they're here because we need to help them upgrade their genetics. Or they try to turn it around and say, oh, they're upgrading ours. But really, that's a bunch of bullshit. I think they need to upgrade our genetics. I think their genetics is messed up because of what they've done. And they're trying to piggyback on us to upgrade their own consciousness, because their consciousness is degraded in their genetically mutated vehicles. So it kind of goes together, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is this whole Nazi connection, that there's a lot of fakery and theatrics being done in the abduction phenomena. I definitely think there's a lot of theatrics being done, and that you can't necessarily take things at face value when people are remembering things. I think you have to dig deeper and really access what I'm calling the spirit component of the person, or we can call it the higher self.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a part of us that knows that absolute truth. And so what I like to do in my work is to work with someone in such a way that they can access directly their higher self, their spirit, and go beyond any kind of programming or trickery or booby traps, so they can get maybe more of a pure truth of what really happened and is happening and who these beings really are. Because I think there is a lot of fakery and there's a lot of programming, and that's unfortunate, but it's true.
Yeah, it's so tough to separate the fact from the fiction. And then when you study MKUltra and you learn about just how malleable our minds and our memories can be, it's hard to separate what's actually happened to us from what just, you know, is in our heads.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I think whoever these beings are, and the human groups that work with some of them, they have this down to a science and have been doing this for a very long time. And I think some of these secrets are very ancient. They've been done by cult groups long before, you know, the Nazi era, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a way that they can do magic and manipulation of our perception, as well as controlling our energy and our consciousness through these, I'm going to call them archontic or demonic beings that they've invoked. And that creates a problem. It, you know, you hear a lot about that with the satanic ritual abuse. That's the more diabolical forms. But there's other kinds of cults. And then there's MKUltra that seems to have more of a military application. But my view is that many of the people who've had super soldier, quote, experiences or making those claims are those who've been heavily involved in MKUltra. Let's say the high level, high level operatives. There's usually some hidden element of what I call a kind of cult or ritual abuse, that I think that the hidden underlying pin that's allowing this and controlling the whole thing is a type of principality or spiritual interdimensional entity or entities. mm-hmm. that have been invoked, like high-level powers that I think are under this whole demiurgic realm that's about in the ancient Gnostic literature.
Yeah, I see plenty of indications that that could be true, too. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit on the ritual or satanic abuse or some of the experiences from people you've talked to that give the listeners a picture of what's happening in some of these cultish circles, like what some of their actual activities or rituals might entail?
Wow. Well, I know that there was someone who just did an excellent radio show with Chris Hart, White Wolf von Otzigen, and somebody who shared his experiences. And he didn't really uncover all these memories until much later down the road. And that's usually how things happen. Let's say if you're a high-level operative, you're an assassin or a super soldier, whatever it is, sometimes you don't come to the awareness of your complete involvement on all these different levels until you go through recovery and healing and therapy for a period of time. So he actually shared the ritual cult abuse element that he discovered through his healing process that was involved. And his was a hardcore, heavy, like, you know, malevolent cult, like a Lilith cult.
Mm.
But not everybody has something that's that, like, diabolical. Sometimes it's something as simple as, oh, like, I remember one gal, she was really into the Egyptian thing, and she had a lot of alien abductions, but they seemed to be just, quote, alien graves. But then on occasion, she would have memories of these aliens dressed up in robes, like, involved in a ritual kind of thing. And we're in a like underground base in Area 51 and be like, well, why are aliens, you know, like in robes doing rituals in like Area 51? I mean, that doesn't sound right. That sounds kind of like something else is going on and it's undercover of something else.
Right.
So every now and then, like if somebody has memories of a lot of blood or sexual abuse or sacrifice or death or being taken where there's people dressed in robes. And sometimes it's just a ceremonial memory that you might have in a dream where people may be dressed in costumes and there's some kind of Masonic feel to it or Egyptian deities being spoken. Then you have a clue that there's some kind of ritual element being done in that person's life. But it's not always available to the memory or the consciousness until they do a lot of recovery work.
Mm-hmm.
That's my experience anyway.
Right. And that's kind of what makes it hard for me to really adopt as a solid truth that I can depend on. I love hearing the stories and it's very fascinating to me, but I'm always a little skeptical when someone tells me that they got their memories way later, then they all came back later or after they were involved in hypnotic regression, because I just am not sure how, you know, memories get into our mind. And sometimes I don't know how reliable those types of memories are.
That's a good question. I mean, sometimes our memories can be messed with mind control and hypnosis. Many people remember things without the aid of regressive hypnosis. And they may, you know, when they do a good investigation of their history, they'll try to find things in the past and corroborative testimonies by family members or people that will remember certain things that they remember, and they can go and check the facts. And, you know, that's the best way to do it if you can. But oftentimes, you know, trauma is such a, the way we react to it or respond to it is that we will repress things until such a time that we feel safe and are ready to actually process that actual memory, because it is so full of emotion usually or very shocking things that we cannot handle that as a child or the age in which we had it. Mm-hmm. And then you add on, you know, the mind control on top of it that they don't want us to remember. There's a lot of these security issues. So when you're being used as an operative under mind control, you know, you have all this extra stuff that they do to make sure that you don't remember because it's a security issue. So it's really amazing that we remember it all, mm-hmm. actually.
Yeah. On the subject of the MILAB stuff, I've had guests who talk about innocent seeming screenings and testings in grade school to actually be programs to seek out psychically gifted or intuitive kids. And we know that the military used to screen their recruits for involvement in special programs that are related to these kind of psychic effects. What do you think the military is doing here today? Are they still involved in these things? Are they just trying to find people that could maybe open greater channels of communication with the other side? Or are they more deeply involved in working towards something more nefarious? What are the experiencers that you're talking to? What indications are they giving you?
Well, I remember that's something that we shared in our support group early on, actually. It was more the MILABs in particular, or the people who were, had a lot of abilities. And then we would just share, like, you remember when you were a kid in elementary school and then they do these like hearing tests. And then you'd always have to get, they'd call you like two or three times and then set you off in a different room. And then they would be going, you can hear that. You can hear that. And obviously some people just had greater ability to hear frequencies that were, I guess, not normal for the other kids. And they just tended to, you know, want to check certain people more. And then they ended up in these projects. But it's not just the hearing tests. I think there was other programs in the early days where they would, you know, you'd be the special gifted kid and then they'd take you and do stuff. And then you would have a memory swipe and wouldn't remember it. And then you'd be, you know, put in another project or something like Project Pegasus, for example. That's something that Andy Visaggio talked about. Yeah, so I think that they do check, but there must be ways. I mean, there's many people who find themselves in these projects, and it's not necessarily the schools. Although many who have been in these projects, they were orphans, for example, or they were in a Catholic school, or they were basically in some kind of organization that was completely controlled by those who run these programs. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times they were in special schools, and so they were accessed a lot more. Well, I mean, I think they know by a genetic signature or if you're in a certain bloodline or even maybe there's a frequency signature that they could read when you, you know, when you're born and come into incarnation, then it's as if they have some kind of way to detect certain people who are extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they all are. It's just that seems that way. It's like these high vibrating people who are really aware, they tend to get targeted really bad. And there's something to that, you know?
Yeah. And these whole programs, there has to be a strong corporate involvement too, right? Because I mean, with companies like Boeing or Lockheed Martin,
my dad worked for Lockheed.
I'm sorry, you cut out right there. And I think that was important. What was that?
I said, Lockheed. Yeah. You know, my dad worked for Lockheed. No wonder why I blanked out.
Yeah. Right. I actually knew that. And I also saw in your bio that you worked for some biotech corporations in San Diego where I live. And I just recently had a guest who talked about the strong military corporate collusion here, as well as the high concentration of gang stalking and MILABS experiences going on in the area. And in particular with this corporation, SAIC. And
James Farley would probably know about that. In fact, James also lived in San Diego around the same time, you know, that I did, and we were actually part of the same support group. So he, you know, knew about SAIC because I remember him talking about that. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me that there's many that are military industrial interests in some kinds of technologies and then either experimenting or, you know, using people in certain family bloodlines for their own uses. I mean, I could see that's a probability just based on technology, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, you've said you've had a couple experiences you alluded to, but it is an interesting background for yourself with your dad working for Lockheed and you working in the area to be here in such a hotbed for this kind of stuff and then branching out to give counseling and therapy to victims of these things.
Absolutely. I mean, there's always this process of awakening. And, you know, really one of the reasons why I got my master's in counseling psychology, I really wanted to learn more about the abduction and the UFO phenomena because I knew it had happened to me in my life and I wanted to learn and I wanted to heal and I wanted to help others heal and learn what I learned. So it was all a discovery process. And when I look back on it now, I feel like that, you know, I could have been involved in a project where maybe they wanted me to do something, but I didn't do what they wanted me to do.
Mm-hmm.
That I chose healing and I chose, you know, what I felt was a better route than just being a scientist. You know, I mean, I could have just been a scientist, but I didn't want to do that. So.
Yeah. Well, more power to you. And you mentioned bloodlines, and that's something I want to elaborate on a little bit because oftentimes it can be hard just to even peg down who some of these big elite quote unquote Illuminati families even are. And then some people talk about the bloodlines of the fallen angels. That's even harder to trace or get verification of. Can you give us some more details about that element, how you actually parse out a particular experiencer's background and determine that they are part of a branch of some high profile family tree?
Well, when I talk to people, I take as much of their history that they're able to share, that they're willing to share, because I think there is family involvement. And to me, it's definitely bloodline. So sometimes you could tell by the surname, or you just trace it back, you know, whatever line, and find, you know, is there a name that's like related to royalty that you could trace back in history? Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. And then, you know, there's blood type. You want to check the blood type. And, you know, there are many of the Rh negatives tend to be chosen at a higher statistical frequency than the norm. And I feel like there's something there. Although, you know, sometimes you don't know unless somebody just tells you, because they know they're in a family that's a high level Illuminati bloodline that's involved in the cult activity. But I think most people are not that caliber. But the high level bloodliners, they're going to be involved in things that are more overt, like the things that Savali talks about. And she was actually from the San Diego area and helped train many people. So she explained a lot of the classic Illuminati training scenarios and the kind of things that happen to those families and what they do. Mm-hmm. And so Fritz Springmeier also discussed that, like how that happens in the Monarch MKUltra related SRA programming. But the people that I'm working with, you don't always see such an overt high level bloodline red flag, for example. It's just not so overt. Mm-hmm. And I think now with many of the MILABs, it seems like as long as they have spiritual permission to work with the person through some agreement of entrapment that's based on a spiritual law, and that in conjunction with some kind of genetic signature that they want, then they can just up and take you. And so it's as if you have those desired qualities, then it's as if those things in your life are engineered in such a way that you have a type of systematic trauma that may come through, quote, your family or your work or your relationships, or even just happen only in the abduction or the other dimensional realm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always so clear cut and overt now. I think it's because their technology is so good that now that they know how to do it so well, because really, if they want to use you as an operative to carry out an agenda, they want to cause the mind to be traumatized, to dissociate, so they can program it with personalities, programs, abilities, and overlay it with, let's say, attached entities or demons or whatever you want to call them. And that's basically what they want to do when they use you as one of their own. Yeah. So they want all those qualities along with high intelligence, right? And just an ability to do whatever they want you to do.
Right.
So you don't necessarily have to, it doesn't have to show in your outer life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be subtle. And I do think that is a really compelling angle, the idea that, you know, having a grandfather or a great grandfather who was involved in Freemasonry or some secret society, this idea that they have blood oaths or offerings for future generations in exchange for, you know, wealth and power in their own life. I think that's really interesting. And it seems totally possible to offer up your unborn child to some entity in exchange for wealth or power. I'm interested, though, in the logistics of such a deal. Have you looked into what makes a covenant like that binding? Because if I did something like sold my soul to Satan on a piece of loose leaf paper on the third grade playground, I would hope that that doesn't actually count for anything. But what do you know about these type of agreements?
That's a good question. Actually, I came to, understand more about the spiritual laws through what I call the Aboriginal Dreamtime Healing and the Laws of Lore.
Hmm.
And that's actually an Aboriginal kind of understanding of how reality works with the spiritual worlds and the dreamtime to why certain things happen. And there's things that we call agreements of entrapment. And sometimes they're actually quite subtle and they're not as overt as like signing a contract or making a deal during a ritual. But I think that when rituals are really done, when you're really making a contract. It is binding. They're usually blood oaths of some. There's always some kind of blood involvement in that or signing. You know, getting your agreement is really important for these beings, getting some kind of agreement because they have to work by their own laws too. But whether or not they're binding, if you were like a kid, you know, I don't know. I think that we're learning through things like holographic kinetics, although this is all very subjective, you know, because this is what happens in a clearing process where we're accessing spirit and spirit's taking us to the origin of a particular trauma or issue where we know there's some kind of pattern or interference going on. Mm-hmm. And so we just take where the spirit leads us. And then the spirit might show us a particular experience where something occurred, where it was a trauma or where an ancestor did something and made an agreement. And so we basically cancel it out. We go back in time and you cancel it out and you recreate something that you want and you get rid of the entities and you basically change the past, change the present and recreate your future. So you have the power to do that. As long as you can work with your spirit and work with someone else who's in agreement with you to do that. I think you could even do it with prayer personally, that you could just pray that you want to cancel all those contracts that might be in your family line to make sure that, you know, you're out of that game and you don't want to take part in any game that you're not aware of how you might be accessed in some way. So
that's interesting. Yeah, I love the idea. I mean, I've had guests talk about the financial success of certain groups like the Knights Templar and their worship of Baphomet. And it's a bit of a paradigm shift when you start attributing super successful factions of the elite with these individual entities like Baphomet. I mean, they had to be getting something out of the deal. Maybe it's the offspring of these people.
Oh, sure. I mean, I know I have worked with people who are sought after for one reason or another, and I believe there's certain bloodlines that are very sought out because they have certain abilities and lineages that for some reason they want them and that they will make offers to people. And a lot of times when they make offers, it's not always like something that's happening in the 3D world where they, you know, at a boardroom and they offer you this contract, blah, blah, blah. A lot of times they do it subtly and then they'll come into your dreams, but they make it very well known. This is not a dream and this is what we're offering you. And they will offer you whatever you want if you just do what they want. Believe me, that happens a lot.
Right.
And you can accept it, but then nobody ever knows because it's done on this other realm, but it's just as binding.
Yeah. And if you think about this reality as illusionary in nature or holographic, the idea of giving up a part of yourself for a piece of the hologram seems so backwards. And these entities probably are just laughing all the way to the bank. You know, they're like,
yeah,
you know, I got a piece of something real and all I had to do was a little abracadabra over here and show them a shiny car, some green pieces of paper and a vault. And now I got the only thing that really matters in this life.
Yeah, essentially, because it is our power. I mean, this whole bloodline thing is really fascinating when you, if some of these ancient Gnostic scriptures are true about what really happened in the beginning with, let's say, the demiurgic, the archons and the beings under them that crossbred with Eve and some of these humans where they actually created, they call it the serpent line, but it might be actually many variations, that it's a type of hybrid that comes from, you know, the father element is from like a demiurgic source. So there's many lines that claim that they're under a different fallen, you can call them fallen angels. And then there's those that are supposedly of the more pure spiritual race that in the Gnostic literature, they call it the Sethian race, the spiritual race, which is basically just like Adam and Eve or the pure human spirituals that came, our spirit came from the eternal realm. Whereas the demiurge is a secondary creation that did not come from the eternal realm. That's why we have more spiritual power than they do. But they're always trying to trick us and control and manipulate us to take our power so we don't know we have it and just do all these dumb games, right?
Right.
But supposedly there is a certain line of humans that have a greater spiritual faculty of remembrance. And in Gnostics, they call it acquaintance. It's really remembering who you are. Mm-hmm. And remembering the eternal realm from where you came and reconnecting with that inner knowing. And so I think that there's bloodlines where you have a little bit of more of those qualities and you find it like I've worked with people who, let's say women who claim that, you know, they're just sought after like friggin', I don't know what you call it, but they're just these beings are always after them for some reason. It's because they have a genetic quality or their blood. They have the starfire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, these beings come after them because they have this quality and they have superior psychic, I don't even want to call it psychic, spiritual remembrance and abilities and awareness. And so they're sought after. And then what these darker bloodlines will do is they'll seek to intermarry and interbreed with the pure ones because they want to hijack, control, and exploit the pure power that comes from the other one. And so that's what a lot of these bloodlines, they basically, they're intermarrying so they can take the true spiritual gifts from the true spiritual race. And so now all we have is just a mixture of all of that. Now everybody's probably some hybrid, right?
Right.
So that's, they're after certain lines more than others. And there really is a real thing that, and I read this actually in a French, it was a French translation, because I think the French and the Europeans know a hell of a lot about this kind of thing. That there is something that is passed on from in the bloodlines of spiritual gifts that will happen, let's say, after somebody dies, and then within a month or less or whatever, then the ancestor who is the remaining living ancestor will receive spiritual gifts of the one that just died. Mm-hmm. Because there is something that is passed on through the blood. So there is something to that.
Yeah, it seems like we can say there's a lot of different things going on, but still only to a fraction of people. And skeptics probably roll their eyes and ask, where is the hard data for some of these wilder claims? And a smoking gun is probably always just going to be outside of our reach for a lot of this stuff. But anecdotally, just look at some of the major players that we do know about. Henry Kissinger and David Rockefeller. Go look at a recent picture of these guys. They don't look like your sweet old clueless grandpa. I mean, could a person even look more demonic? But that's not all, folks. You know, maybe I'm dealing with too small of a data set, but look at the law of averages with some of these guys' ages. Henry Kissinger, 92. David Rockefeller, 100. Wow. Pope Ratzinger, another demon-looking fucker. He's 89. George Herbert Walker Bush, he's 91. Barbara Bush, 90. Queen of England, 90. What are the chances? You know, when are they going to get cancer and heart disease and all this kind of stuff? When is someone going to pull them aside and ask the secret? And then we hear these rumors of strange longevity rituals, and not to go over on too big of a tangent, but we have people like David Bowie, Amy Winehouse, Prince, Whitney Houston, all these well-off celebrities, and there's speculation that they're sacrifices of some kind. They definitely died decades earlier, and it's not conclusive, but it really makes you wonder why these elite are living well into their 90s and the rest of us aren't. I wonder if they might be here in another 10 years, you know? How far are they going to push it?
Yeah. There's no mystery, really. I mean, I believe the technology is there for life extension and other occult means to acquire that through vampirism, and that's pretty well known in black magic, you know, how to do that. But not everybody can live that long anyway. I mean, I think they just turn into psychopaths, basically. You know, once they get to that stage, they're completely hosted by a non-human demonic, or you can call it like an archontic mind parasite, whatever. At that stage, they're completely taken over.
Right.
And I don't even know if they're human anymore, you know?
Yeah, that's a distinction I am very curious about. How much of this is a partnership, and then how much of this is like the elite being ridden by some type of entity?
Well, I think it's both, you know,
right.
Because there's certain bloodlines that have been heavily influenced. They're very powerful bloodlines where they maybe make oaths and they're of that, quote, religion and of those practices. So if you're born in those ancestries, you may have a heavier, you can call it ancestral overlay of interference. Mm-hmm. We can call it interference. And it would be the soul body of those people are more heavily influenced by the beings that have been invoked and made deals with. Mm-hmm. But I think that people can overcome and that they can clear, you know, they can heal and they can get out from that. But yeah, certain bloodlines are more heavily influenced.
And this is kind of a random question, but we talked a little bit about blood types and certain things affecting people. What about people who have contracted Morgellons? Have you researched them at all, or has this possible connection ever crossed your path?
Well, I mean, I've heard of it. I've had a few clients who do have Morgellons symptoms, you know, some of whom knew they were in experimental projects under MK Ultra.
Mm.
And I think there is a connection there with some of them. They're just an experimental. They're being used for an experimental kind of thing. Some of them might, but that's like the nanotechnology. And Harold Koutsvella is probably the best person who's researched those things.
Yeah, I talked to him. I had him on, and fascinating stuff. I've been wondering about it ever since.
Yeah, I mean, that's some nasty stuff.
It is. And not to derail this into a whole nother topic, but I recently saw that documentary Vaxxed. And a stat that stuck with me is that they say that if this current trend continues, by 2032, half of our children will have autism and 80% of boys. And now that sounds pretty radical. But yeah, if you couple that with the strange reports of Morgellons and observe the way people are plugged into technology, becoming more obsessed every day, 2032 starts to look like a very strange world indeed. And I wonder if we're not being engineered to be empty husks for something else that's coming.
Mm-hmm. I would say so. I'd say it's looking that way. And a lot of people think, well, the whole thing is the artificial intelligence beast, which is actually running a lot of these things. And that's a danger, because it's running the humans and running the groups so that it's harder to deviate from, because it's locked in a lot of control systems to this psychopathic, absolutely crazy bullshit that is just unbelievable. I mean, they want us to turn into a bunch of mind controlled zombies or completely taken over, where they're using our soul or our spiritual energy to carry out their agenda, so they can basically piggyback their psychopathic life force on us or through us, you know?
Right.
And I think, you know, some of this goes back to the alien parasite aspect or agenda, like the alien parasite consciousness that will parasite our energy bodies and our physical bodies. And they do that to live through us, because that's how they extend their life, through us. And it's a parasitism. It's not symbiosis. It's parasitism.
Right.
So it's something like that, because they want to, like in Malanga's work, and this goes back to Corrado Malanga of Italy, worked with alien abductions for 25 years.
Right. I've heard you reference him before.
Yeah. And I really like how he's been able to explain this in his own Evidium theory, which is in Italian. But it's basically, we have three components of consciousness within our body, you know, the mind, spirit, and soul, which if someone is, let's say, integrated and healthy and really in connection with their, quote, spiritual remembrance, they're going to have this integrated consciousness that can seal off a lot of the interference because of the integration factor. But in people who've been traumatized over and over again, especially by these alien parasites, they have the incoherence between the mind, spirit, and soul, such that we don't have a clear communication between, let's say, the mind and the soul, or the spirit and the soul, or the mind and the soul, so that you can't have access to that part of yourself. But then the aliens will insert themselves, so that they insert themselves in the mind component or the denser energy body, that will affect our perception and can block our meridians and can screw us up. Mm-hmm. So that's actually what Malanga found. So he was able to work with a method to help us clear ourselves, basically through a guided session, and find out where these aliens and how they're parasiting. And was able to discover that how we experience the parasitism can actually define archetypically what kinds of beings they are and where they're from. Mm-hmm. So I found that pretty fascinating, because many people who've had what they think is, let's say, a reptilian being parasiting their field, let's say an interdimensional, fourth dimensional being, they will be seen or observed or felt as if they're hovering in the back of them, or clenching onto their back or their solar plexus or their sexual areas, but they feel like they're always on the backside of them. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a reason for that, because of their nature, that they're nothing more than shadow beings that supposedly are archetypically from the universe behind us. And that's why they're experienced that way. Whereas if we have a being that's parasiting us, that's from our own universe, it's not felt that way, or it's not experienced that way. It's experienced in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty amazing. And it really goes back to a lot of the same things that we're finding with, you know, the Aboriginal Dreamtime healing, you know, the spirit entity attachments, and how these beings behave and what they're really after. So I think it's a lot of the same thing under many different names, because these beings, many of the alien beings, I think they use many different forms and masks, but that's why it's so confusing when
right.
they talk about all the different alien races. And, oh, it's this one and it's that one and da da da. And it gets so confusing. But I think they use many different masks, and that's why it's so confusing. So we really have to, you know, find out what is their energetic signature and what are they doing to us, and are they speaking the truth? And, you know, you have to use a more refined discernment process.
Right. You definitely do. And we are getting kind of down to it, but your work seems to take you all over the strangeness map. What seems to be the latest piece of the puzzle that has your attention? Where is the work going?
Well, I'm having interest in understanding the multidimensional aspect of our being and the remembrance that we have with our spirit in, let's say, the eternal realm of being, and understanding, let's say, multiple time loops and timelines and lifetimes that will give us a memory of how all this works together and what is our place in that, and just kind of looking at it from a more comprehensive view of connectedness. And really it takes me to a more spiritual place of, we definitely have to do our healing. And the best way to come to that is to connect more deeply with our heart and with our spirit. And once we make that connection, then all else is basically kind of revealed to us in terms of what we really need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the safeguard, is once we make that self connection, then we come to a better understanding of everything.
Right on. Well said. Well, Eve, I really enjoyed talking to you. I think the idea of interdimensional interference in our lives is definitely deserving of this exploration. I'm glad that I could have you here to talk about some of these lesser explored angles. But before we go, would you remind people where to dig deeper into your work, as well as where to grab the books?
Thanks for asking. Yeah. My website is evelorgen.com, E-V-E-L-O-R-G-E-N, evelorgen.com. I also have a Facebook page under Evie Lorgan and Eve Lorgan. And then both my books are available through Amazon, Kindle, and hard copy. And then my website also has information on both books so that you can order it directly there or through Amazon. So, and I'm working on another book with a colleague. So it's always ongoing exploration and discovery of what this is all about. So,
yeah, it doesn't seem like the rabbit hole really ever ends.
Really? Yeah.
But very cool. Fascinating stuff. Thanks again. And take care of yourself out there.
Thank you so much.
You got it.
Have a great day.
You too. Boom, people. Another show in the bag. Not too shabby. You know, it was a listener who told me about Eve's work and the alien love bite idea, so I thought I'd make a good episode. And it is worth exploring, since love is probably the most spell-like experience an average person has. And when you see the pattern of fascination with sex and procreation that beings of lore, space, and magic seem to have, I think you can make a good case that something's going on there on an energetic, spiritual level, multidimensional level, that might not be entirely clear. I definitely think there are cases where people are making a big deal out of nothing or giving too much power to external forces in their life, but you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? I do wish we could have gotten into more details, especially about satanic abuse and cult victims. Obviously, we know the cliche broad terms like blood sacrifice and rituals, but I'd have liked to have heard more about accounts from the Rolodex of cases that Eve's familiarized herself with, but a lot of those are in her books as well. I also think we just talked about several different types of interactions and situations, and it wasn't always clear what was what, and sometimes it towed the line of a battered wife advice show, which I guess might come off as a little bit weird, but I thought some of those were unique approaches to the kind of material fans of a show like this are probably used to hearing. Maybe a lot of familiar concepts, but with a sour, fruity twist. Another reason I was particularly intrigued when I was setting this up is that another listener contacted me and told me about a strange relationship she had, and she had sent me some pictures as well, but apparently she was married to a powerful guy for about 5 years, said he was a Mason and he was filthy rich, told her he got his money from a family business, but she couldn't even find any documentation of this business, and finally concluded that he actually worked high up in a big oil corporation, and he liked collecting voodoo artifacts. He would actually send people to Africa and the birthplace of voodoo to get specific things, sometimes from graves, she said, apparently. I also thought it was interesting. He'd do a lot of high-level wheeling and dealing, but whenever she or another person was around to hear, they would do their dealing in French, so no one could really know what was going on. Crazy stuff, and I thought that maybe we could get some insight into those types of relationships and the idea of entity involvement. But I don't know. Lots of speculation, which has its place, but I don't know if we brought very many new ideas to the table, but I hope you found something interesting in there. And if you want to dig deeper into these things, maybe you've had some abnormal or energetically draining relationships in your own life, and you want to feel like you're not alone or get advice for what to do, Eve's Books would be the best place to go for you that I know. And I do apologize for the delay. I know it's already the 15th of the month, and this is only show number 2, but I did have some scheduling issues. Had to push a show back from when I thought it was going to be recorded and didn't really have time to fill that void. But we are back on track now. We got Eve today. I just recorded a show with Melinda Leslie, who you might remember Robert Guffey bringing up when we discussed his book Camellio and the SAIC Corporation and its weird ties to the Millab abduction experience. And then we're going to be talking to the Dark Prince of Chaos Magic, Gordon White, once again. He has another new book out. This one's called The Chaos Protocols, about success magic in the new economic reality. And I have been reading it and loving it. You'll even find a quote of praise from me in it, which is a bit of an honor. But that's going to be a great one. Really psyched for that. And then I have some other interesting interviews scheduled in the next couple weeks. I hope they go according to plan. And if so, we might be able to blow a few minds. But until then, take care of yourself. I still have some conspiracies I'm trying to clear out that are 50% off at conspiracies.net. And that's pretty much it for me this week. Your move, Cupid, energy vampires, and alien love biters. Your fucking move.
guys. Thanks for listening to the first hour of the Higher Side Chats podcast with me, Greg Carlwood. If you don't know, there is a second hour to all the episodes we do around here. Generally, we're able to get a lot deeper into the topics and ideas that a guest is about. So if you enjoyed what you've heard from THC for free, consider signing up at thehiresidechatsplus.com to get the second hour of the five shows I put together each month. I never really wanted to be a paid subscriber podcast, but I really hate the idea of spending airtime promoting some product that's completely unrelated and telling you the best way to support the show is to buy an audiobook or new underwear by mail or something crazy like that. So instead, if you like the show, double your time with it for $5 a month and let's cut out all the other shit. It's half the price of a movie ticket and you get at least an extra 5 hours of show a month. Collectively, it keeps us stable and it frees me from wasting your time with anything but the show you came to listen to. It's really the only way for an independent, one-man show to make it, and I do what I can so that it's worth your while. Since we started this, I've always tried to use the subscriptions to improve the podcast and make signups more advantageous. It started with just a second hour for the main show, but now we've got a nice forum going where people can get deeper in conversation about the episodes with other listeners, submit a candidate in the guest request thread, or share their own personal projects to get out of the soul-crushing 9-to-5 cog-in-the-wheel life on the entrepreneurs thread. The forum and the plus comments are always the first places I try to go for listener engagement, but it does get harder as the show gets more popular. Because of that, there's also a direct messaging feature that you can use to reach me through the plus site also. But beyond the forum, if you like any of the music I've used for THC, most of it I've hired artists to make, and I provide it all as free downloads to Plus members too. So if you like a particular song you've heard close the show out recently, come get the MP3. I should also mention that if you don't like the idea of paying $5 recurring every month, I get that. You can buy 3 months, 6 months, or a year up front and just be done with it. I have plenty of listeners who send checks and money orders to the P.O. Box too. I try to make it as easy for people as I can, and you can read more about it on the sign-up page. Also, be sure to check out the FAQ help page on the Plus site if you have any questions or concerns about how to listen to a password-protected show on your devices. I've highlighted a lot of great solutions, and one of those would be the iPhone app that just recently hit the Apple App Store. A super kind and talented listener made it for us, and you can use it to stream or download either the free or the Plus show. If you're on Android, I'd use Pocket Casts or Podcast Addict and subscribe to the feed manually that way. I also try to throw in occasional bonus shows or Q&A shows, and I've got a few other weird ideas I might get to try out soon, but I give you all I can for $5, and I hope you'll at least give it a shot if you've listened to a few free shows and you find them unique or valuable. I know there's a lot of podcasts out there, and I'm just one of them. But if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about any of this, please get in touch with us at thehiresidechatsteam@gmail.com. I also wanted to plug the Higher Side newsletter I'm going to be putting out, totally free for anyone who wants to sign up at the main internet website for the show, thehiresidechats.com. You can also get on that email list through the Higher Side Chats Facebook page. There's a button there as well. But the reason I'm doing this is because I get tons and tons of emails after a show goes up asking me about how I feel about a particular guest or topic, and the wrap-up isn't always the best place to do that, especially if I have anything negative to say. Sometimes the dust needs to settle, sometimes I need to hear feedback from you guys first. There are a lot of factors, but I usually have something to communicate to you, and I just don't get to do it. So on the first of the month, I plan to send out a little newsletter with my thoughts about the five shows the previous month, and talk to you about anything else that's on my mind or that's going on. And what's probably most enticing is that I'm going to give you some insight into at least one guest I have coming up in the month, which people have been begging for some posted schedule for a long time. I personally think I'd like the surprise. But sign up for the Higher Side newsletter. It's free. It comes out on the first of the month, and I won't waste your time with any other emails. And that's it. I appreciate you listening. I try to give alternative ideas and guests a fair shake on a high-quality podcast, expose some deep-level conspiracies without the yelling, and I hope to offer some inspiration that even though the system relentlessly suggests you should follow their blueprint to mediocrity, you can do your own thing and live a much happier life despite all the negativity in the world. So go ahead and treat yourself. Isn't it about time?